The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Brad McDonald. It's great to be back with you. It's been a few weeks, I think, since I've hosted a Trumpet Daily radio program. Stephen Flurry is on his way at this moment with the students from Edstone here. He's on his way to the Netherlands. So today you'll be having myself as your host. Tomorrow, I believe it's Richard Palmer. And on Friday, Brent Nachtigall will step into the hot seat. It's a glorious day here in England. The sun is out and bright and warm. I'm just trying to figure out how I can get outside this afternoon and what justifications I can use to get outside and get some sun. Well, during the first part of the program today, I'd like to explore what I think is one of the greatest, maybe it's one of the greatest foreign policy mistakes that America and Britain and even the West has made in recent years. These two nations, and you can include Europe in with them. These two nations, though, are making a terrible mistake in the Middle East. And the consequences of this total misreading of trends in the Middle East, the consequences are going to be disastrous. So we'll cover that for the first 20 or 30 or 40 minutes of today's program. And then at the end of the program, I'd like to conclude by recognizing a pretty wonderful achievement by a pretty wonderful lady. Britain's Queen, Elizabeth II, turns 90 tomorrow, April 20th, or April 21st. What date is it today, Richard? It's the 20th today, so Queen Elizabeth turns 90 tomorrow. But it's really a great milestone. Her Majesty has really just been an outstanding monarch in many ways. Not perfect, but she really is a wonderful lady and has had a wonderful time ruling England these past 63 years, I think it is. So we'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the program. But first, let's explore this mistake that America and Britain and the West are making in the Middle East. Now, just to lead into this, I thought I'd read an article from Newsweek. This is from yesterday. A Newsweek article from yesterday, and the title is Why We Should Let Iran Fight Islamic State. Just think about that title for a second. Why We Should Let Iran Fight the Islamic State. And the author goes on to lay out his argument for why America and why the West needs to farm out the fight against Islamic State to Iran. This is what he says. The infiltration of Palestinian territory by the Islamic State militant group could draw in American ground troops in our next futile Middle East conflict. The way to offset Sunni ISIS is to let Shia Iran do the fighting in the Middle East's sectarian war via forces almost as vicious, including Hezbollah and the Revolutionary Guard. And by supporting Shia movements fighting Sunni radicals as Iran is already doing in Yemen. So here's this Newsweek article saying Iran is on our side in the fight against ISIS. Iran views ISIS the way the West views ISIS. Iran is as concerned about this terrorist organization as we are. And we need to join forces with Tehran, or we at least have to give them a license to go ahead and do what they need to do in the region to fight the Islamic State. Iran can be an ally, many seem to believe. Iran can be an ally, many believe, in our fight against the Islamic State. You can read, just do a Google search. And there's all kinds of headlines making this point that Iran is on the same side as the West in its views on the Islamic State. One headline from the National Review from last year: Iran is leading the fight against the Islamic State. Last December, there was a Guardian article: Iran calls for concerted international effort to beat ISIS and end the Syrian war. How wonderful of Iran, calling for the international community to join them and defeat ISIS. ISIS is a horrible terrorist organization. No doubt you know the name. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or the Islamic State of Iraq or Syria. Or I think they also go by the name Daesh. But ISIS is a Sunni terrorist organization that's based in Iraq and Syria, although its presence is growing throughout the Middle East and North Africa, and they're really establishing some pretty worrying connections with terrorist groups in Libya and Egypt and elsewhere. ISIS came on the scene, you'll remember, in a pretty dramatic way in 2014, when they took control of some of Iraq's larger cities, Mosul, Fallujah, Ramadi. And throughout 2014, they pretty much stormed across Iraq and into Syria. ISIS, too, is responsible for some of the recent terrorist attacks in Europe. The attack most recently in Brussels at the airport there and the train station. They claimed responsibility for that, or they've been connected with that attack. And the same goes for the bombings in Paris last year. Right now, ISIS by far is the most terrifying terrorist group on the world scene. ISIS has emerged in the past couple of years as the face of radical Islamic terrorism. I think if you asked most people to identify the world's worst terrorist organization, most people would say ISIS. The group is just, it's famous for its brutality. There's always just, the attacks are just so dramatic and hard-hitting, and just, they're excruciating to watch some of the scenes of the attacks that they commit. Everyone knows who ISIS is. ISIS is the face of radical Islamic terrorism. And as we address radical Islamic terrorism as America and the West and increasingly Europe, these attacks are just forcing Europe to address radical Islamic terrorism. But as we address this problem of Islamic terrorism, the solution, so many seem to believe, is we've got to defeat ISIS. We've got to defeat ISIS. We've got to rid the Middle East of ISIS. We've got to rid Europe of ISIS terrorists. The focus is on ISIS. And as we saw in that article from Newsweek, so many now believe that we have to ask Iran to come and join us, or Iran to help us. We have to ask Iran to do their part to defeat ISIS. It's just taken for granted today that Iran is the enemy of the Islamic State. And the foundation of that belief is, well, Iran is, you know, most Iranians belong to or practice Shi'i Islam, and ISIS is a Sunni Islam terrorist organization, or they subscribe to Sunni Islam and its beliefs. Therefore, these two organizations, or these two entities, they're enemies. You look at a lot of these articles and they frame Iran as the good guy and ISIS as the bad guy. I'll read a quote from, here's a National Interest article. This is from 2014. It says, the title of the article is "Bad Move, ISIS: Why America and Iran Should Work Together." And the article says, while a threat to U.S. interests, the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, ISIS, presents us with a unique opportunity to reset the Middle East equation, to actively transform regional relations, to abate the Cold War between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and to forge a new working relationship with Iran. And this is 2 years ago now, or almost 2 years ago, but if you look at what's happened between America and Iran, I mean, this really has happened. This great thawing has taken place. and we're treating Iran as a legitimate power. We're as a moderate power. We're looking to them for assistance. We're giving them the benefit of the doubt with the nuclear deal. The article continues, as the United States moves to escalate its war against ISIS and forge a coalition against the terrorist group, it is important that Iran be included in the process. After all, U.S. and Iranian interests have increasingly converged in the Middle East with the emergence of a common enemy, and no power in the region is better suited to taking on ISIS than Iran. That's the reasoning. That's the prevailing narrative that we're hearing now when it comes to Iran and ISIS. Iran thinks the same as the West. Iran fears ISIS just as much the West does as the West. Iran has an interest in bringing down ISIS, just like the West. Our leaders are looking at the situation and they're thinking, well, we both want ISIS defeated. Let's work together. Now, there's opposition to working together, let's say, you know, closely. But if we don't work together, if we can't, you know, if there's too much division within the governments of America and Britain to work with Iran, then everyone thinks, well, we need to give Iran more license in the Middle East to take on ISIS. We need to give them assistance in any way we can to take on ISIS. Now think about this a little bit further. If the strategy for defeating ISIS now includes working with Iran, or in the very least empowering Iran, giving it license to go out and deal with ISIS the way it wants to. If the strategy for defeating ISIS now includes working with Iran or empowering Iran to fight these terrorists, then this comes with implications on America's wider relationship with Tehran by making Iran a key component in our war on ISIS. America and the West, we're giving Iran leverage in the overall relationship. If Iran is an ally in the war on ISIS, or if our policy is to give Iran license to confront ISIS, then America will want to avoid upsetting the Iranians. Let's not upset Tehran. Let's not get too tough with Tehran, they'll think, because we need them in this war on ISIS. You know, let's not get too tough with Iran for its ICBM program, or let's not get too tough with Iran for breaking the nuclear agreement, because we need Iran to help us confront ISIS. They're our partner in purging ISIS from the Middle East. And this is what we see happening in the Middle East. Iran is emerging as an important cog or an important ally in the battle against ISIS. Now, all of this, you know, this view that we can work with Iran, or Iran is part of the solution to the problem of radical Islamic terrorism, that's what it boils down to. The West increasingly views Iran as part of the solution to ridding the world of radical Islamic terrorism. Iran is our ally. Iran is a partner. We can work with Iran to rid the world of radical Islamic terrorism. Now that belief is founded on the premise, again, that Iran and ISIS are mortal enemies. It's founded on the premise that Iran views the Islamic State the same way the West does, that Iran fears ISIS to the same degree that the West does. What if that's not the case? What if that premise is all wrong? What if Iran is okay with ISIS and its activities and its aspirations? That's something to think about. And we'll think about it a little bit more. For now, we'll go ahead and take a short break, and then we'll come back and we'll explore that question of, well, what if Iran and ISIS are not mortal enemies? What does that mean for America's foreign policy in the Middle East?
The Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'm replacing Mr. Stephen Flurry today. He's on his way to Europe. Today we're talking about the Islamic State terrorist organization. We're talking about Iran. We're talking about America's recruitment of Iran in dealing with ISIS. And we've in the first part of the program there, we just talked about how America and Britain and the West really believes, and some people just sincerely believe, that ISIS and Iran are enemies, and that because they're enemies, we can recruit or we can partner up with Iran. Iran can be of assistance in our attempt to confront ISIS. And America and Britain, they'll make all kinds of concessions, or they'll really appease Iran on a lot of issues. And one reason they do that, again, is because we want Iran to help us confront ISIS. But what if Iran and ISIS are not mortal enemies? Well, I've got some research here that shows that Iran and ISIS, they're not the arch enemies that many believe they are. In fact, there's a lot of evidence out there that proves that Iran is largely responsible for the creation of ISIS. And there's also evidence and a few articles here and there making the point that Iran is actually exploiting the presence of ISIS in Syria and Iraq and even globally. Iran is exploiting the presence of ISIS to further its ambitions in the Middle East and the world. I'll just go through a few articles here. This first one is from The Tower magazine. This is from its December 2015 issue. The article is written by Benjamin Decker. The title is, Iran is more deeply tied to ISIS than you think. And he writes, as the West continues to partner with Iran to degrade and ultimately destroy the Islamic State, it is worth remembering that one of Iran's highest-ranking terrorists was instrumental in founding Al-Qaeda and also that the split between Shia and Sunni jihadis is murky at best. And then a little bit further down, Abu al-Zarqawi and the rise of al-Qaeda in Iraq, the predecessor to the Islamic State, has been well documented. Comparably little attention has been given to the group's global outreach. While the Islamic State was born out of Osama bin Laden's global jihad against the West, many overlook the importance of another player in the equation, Iran. He continues, this may seem surprising, given that Iran, the stalwart of the Shia Crescent, is currently embroiled in a regional war against the Islamic State in both Syria and Iraq. That's what it looks like. It looks like Iran is engaging in hand-to-hand combat. Iran's forces are engaging in hand-to-hand combat with ISIS terrorists in Syria and Iraq. And in some cases, they are. In some cases, they are. But Iran's, you know, it's not as much as we've been led to believe. I have some other quotes here from Syrian officials, which show that Iran isn't confronting ISIS terrorists as much as we've been led to believe in Syria. But back to this article. However, Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security, described as one of the largest and most dynamic intelligence agencies in the Middle East by the Pentagon, has, over the past 20 years, provided financial, material, technological, and other support services to AQI. And the Islamic State came out of the AQI, al-Qaeda in Iraq. Iran, I mean, he's saying here, there's evidence that shows that Iran has worked with ISIS leaders. Iran helped ISIS get established back when it was the al-Qaeda in Iraq. This article, if you wanted to go find it on the net, this article gives a detailed explanation of Iran's involvement in the creation of not just al-Qaeda, out of which came ISIS, but various Sunni terrorist organizations in the Middle East. You see, we take for granted that Sunni Islam and Shiite Islam, they're mortal enemies, they never work together. But that's just not true. It's not true. Like Decker said, the relationship between Sunni Islam and Shiite Islam is much murkier than that. But in this article, Decker shows that how Iran was responsible for grooming key Sunni terrorist leaders, how Iran was responsible for financing Sunni terrorist organizations, how Iran was responsible for supplying weapons and tactical assistance to Sunni terrorist groups. It's really, I mean, if you're interested in James Bond movies or spy novels or something like that, I mean, this article is an interesting read because he tracks two or three individuals and how, you know, I forget the name of I forget their names now, but they were born either in Palestine or in Lebanon, and they were Sunni. They practiced Sunni Islam, but then early on they began working with Iran. They would travel to Tehran. They would receive money and training and weapons from Tehran. There's a network, a radical Islamic terrorist network in the Middle East. And that network is comprised of Sunni and Shiite terrorists all working together. And do you know where the nucleus is? The nucleus is Iran. Here's another article from December 2015. And this article is referencing an article that had just come out from Ynet News in Israeli media organization Ynet, and this Ynet article showed that Iran had been giving money to Hamas, and Hamas had been passing some of that money on to ISIS terrorists in the Sinai. So Iran was essentially financing these ISIS terrorists in the Sinai. This article, The Different Stages of Iranian Support for ISIS, December 2015. Recent reports that Iran is supporting ISIS through its funding of Hamas are a reminder that the Islamic Republic has long backed the powerful jihadist group and its predecessors in a variety of ways. In 2012, the United States Treasury Department exposed the extensive financial ties between Iran and Al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI, the terrorist organization that evolved into ISIS. The generous support Iran afforded ISIS in its formative years was part of a broader alliance that the Islamic Republic established with Al-Qaeda over a decade ago. As AQI metastasized across Iraq and eventually became ISIS, Iran sought to position itself at the vanguard of the global effort against the terrorist group, claiming that it was dedicated to beating back its advances. However, Iran and its clients, particularly Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, have notably failed to dislodge ISIS from any significant territory. And then it quotes a U.S. military intelligence officer saying that Iran's military had not been actively fighting ISIS terrorists as much as it had led us to believe. And then this intelligence officer, he said, Iran needs the threat of ISIS and Sunni jihadist groups to stay in Syria and Iraq in order to become further entrenched in Damascus and Baghdad. So Iran could go into Syria, it could send its soldiers into Iraq and say that, we're going into Iraq to confront ISIS. But the strategy, the benefit was Iranian soldiers were now in Iraq. Just one more article here. This is from Tablet from earlier this month, April 13th. And this article, the author interviewed Abdul Halim Kadum. He's the former vice president and foreign minister of Syria. It's a really interesting interview. This former vice president became a member of Syria's Ba'ath Party in 1949. He helped Bashar Assad's father take over the country, take over the Ba'ath Party, and then take over Syria. And when Assad's father died, Kadam served as Bashar al-Assad's vice president for 5 years until he retired, and now he lives in Paris. But this man understands the Middle East, and he understands the way it works over there, and he understands, too, Iran. This is what he said in this interview. Kadam understands the Assad regime and ISIS to be partners of a sort. And then the article quotes Kadam. It is a fact that Daesh does not fight the government in Damascus anymore. Then the government in Damascus bombs Daesh. So, and then he continues, although it is Sunni, Daesh's, or the Islamic State's, roots are in Iran, in a group of ex-officers of the Iraqi Presidential Guard that went to train in Iran and that Iran accepted because they thought they could use them later. And their calculation proved right. That's an incredible statement from a man who has sat at the same table as Iran's leaders. I'll read it again. Although it is Sunni, the Islamic State's roots are in Iran, in a group of ex-officers of the Iraqi Presidential Guard that went to train in Iran and that Iran accepted because they thought they could use them later, and their calculation proved right. Kadam continued, Daesh worked with Iran and with the Syrian regime to get the Americans away from Iraq. The idea was to then share the territory between Sunnis and Shiites, an agreement which the Iranians refused once the U.S. was gone. But here it is again, just more proof that Iran and ISIS are not the mortal enemies that we think they are. Iran does not think the same way about ISIS that the West does. Iran doesn't fear ISIS the way the West does. Now, it's true that Iran is certainly no doubt monitoring ISIS and its activities in Iraq and Syria, and Iran would have certain red lines to where it wouldn't let ISIS, take territory too close to its border. I'm sure there are strategic assets, or what Iran views as strategic assets, that it will not let ISIS touch, and if ISIS goes after them, then Iran will engage with them militarily. But Iran is not trying to eliminate ISIS altogether. Iran is not trying to eliminate ISIS in Europe. It has no interest in doing that. For Iran, the truth is, for Iran, there are more advantages than disadvantages with ISIS. And it's absolutely foolish to seek Iran's help in the fight against ISIS. It's foolish for America and Britain and the West to think that they can rely on Iran and to think that they should give Iran license to develop its military, to engage in more, you know, military operations to defeat ISIS. It's foolish to think that Iran is going to go after ISIS and that Iran is our friend and ally in this war on radical Islamic terrorism, of which ISIS is the face. The truth is, the rise of ISIS has proven enormously beneficial to Iran, to the world's number one state sponsor of terrorism. The rise of ISIS since, well, they've been growing the past decade or so, but since 2014, they've really taken off to where everyone knows who they are right now. They're the most feared terrorist organization on earth. Well, the rise of ISIS has helped or benefited Iran in a number of ways. The first way that the rise of ISIS has benefited Iran is ISIS has distracted America and the West from Iran's terrorist activities. ISIS has become the face of radical Islamic terrorism. And as we looked at earlier, the solution to eliminating Islamic terrorism now is confronting ISIS. Iran is no longer on our radar as a potential terrorist threat. When did you last read an article talking about Iran as the nucleus of global Islamic terrorism? They're not out there. You don't read it. All we read about is ISIS is the face of Islamic terrorism. We must confront ISIS. We must deal with ISIS. And no one talks about Iran. No one talks about the head of the terrorist snake. And when you get in and research some of this material, almost with every single terrorist group in the Middle East, Sunni or Shia, in almost every case, you can trace their origins back to Tehran. ISIS has distracted America and the West from Iran's terrorist activities. The rise of ISIS has enabled Iran to refashion its reputation in the region and also globally. Iran, the past couple of years, has cast itself as the region's savior. Iran is going to rescue Iraq from ISIS. Iran is going to rescue Christians. Iran is going to rescue homosexuals and Shia Muslims. Just April 17th, what's that, 3 or 4 days ago, Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini, he came out, well, the title of the Associated Press article is, Iran vows to defend Muslim nations against terrorism and Israel. How wonderful of Iran. It's going to defend the Middle East against terrorism. And then the Associated Press article says, Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, on Sunday vowed to defend Muslim countries against terrorism and Israel. Oh, because Israel is such a huge threat to the Middle East. Because Israel is out there engaging in warfare on the rest of the Middle East. But Rouhani said that Iran is going to defend Muslim countries against terrorism and Israel, while insisting that its neighbors should not feel threatened. Speaking during a National Army Day parade in which Iranian forces displayed sophisticated air defense systems recently acquired from Russia, Rouhani praised Tehran's role in helping the Assyrian and Iraqi governments roll back the Islamic State group. So Iran, the past couple of couple of years has refashioned its reputation. It's now seen by many, especially in the West, probably in the West more than in the Middle East, but it's now seen as the savior against the menace that is the Islamic State. Another way that the rise of the Islamic State has benefited Iran is that Iran has been able to bolster its military presence in Iraq and Syria, all under the guise of fighting ISIS terrorists. Many in the West consider Iran to be a military partner. There was a story 2 or 3 years ago of America's Air Force bombing ISIS terrorists for Iran, although they were working together to confront some of these terrorists. The past few months, ISIS has suffered some significant blows in Iraq and Syria. And it seems like, at least in Iraq and Syria, maybe their presence is diminishing a little bit. It's losing some territory and it's losing some cities. But you watch and see who will replace ISIS in Iraq. It's going to be Iran. Another benefit to Iran is that America's reconciliation with Iran has resulted in a dramatic souring of relations between America and Saudi Arabia. Now, this reconciliation between America and Iran, there's a lot more to it than the fact that America, you know, wants Iran to do more to confront ISIS. A lot more to it. But this reconciliation has taken place. Stephen Fleury's talked about that a lot on this program. And Saudi Arabia is alarmed by how much credence Iran is being given, by how Iran is being just embraced by the international community. That alarms Saudi Arabia. And, I mean, if you've been reading the news, relations between America and Saudi Arabia have deteriorated dramatically in recent months. And Iran is thrilled by that development because Saudi Arabia is Iran's largest opponent in the Middle East. Another benefit to Iran is, or another good thing for Iran is that Iran is thrilled by these ISIS terrorist attacks on the West. Iran is thrilled by these ISIS terrorist attacks on the West. No doubt you've seen the footage of Ayatollah Khomeini and Iranian leaders talking about how they want to bomb America, how they want to wipe Israel off the map, how they want to bomb Western civilization and Europe. And here ISIS is doing it. They're not going to disagree with it. They're not going to reprimand ISIS or condemn ISIS in a serious way. They may make token gestures because they know that token gestures of sympathy for the West will just deceive the West further into thinking that Iran is on their side. But fundamentally, they don't disagree with, they're not repulsed by the activities of ISIS, the terrorist attacks, the beheadings. Iran's not repulsed by that. When those attacks are against America or Israel or Europeans, Iran is fully on board. And as I said, you may find an article or two or a quote or two from Rouhani or Khomeini saying, well, you know, we sympathize with the victims of the Paris bombings. They're lies delivered to give the appearance that Iran is on the West side, and then to gain more concessions from the West. Iran is thrilled by what ISIS is doing in Europe. The rise of ISIS has made Iran stronger. ISIS has boosted Iran's reputation and standing in the international community. The rise of ISIS has enabled Iran to extract concession after concession from America and the West. The rise of ISIS has helped Iran improve its strategic position in Iraq and throughout the Middle East. the rise of ISIS has undermined, directly and then indirectly, Iran's primary opponents in the region. ISIS has been a good thing for Iran. Now, of course, this is not to say that they're best friends, and I don't have any doubt that Iranian soldiers have been engaged in real battle with ISIS terrorists. But only when those ISIS terrorists impose on Iran's red lines. Only when those ISIS terrorists, you know, maybe threaten an asset that is important to Iran, then Iran will do something. I'm sure that if ISIS terrorists started to, make incursions into Iran, I'm sure Iran would fight back pretty violently and engage in real warfare with them. But Iran doesn't want to see ISIS eliminated. When it comes to ISIS, Iran's goal is to manage ISIS's activities, not eliminate its presence. Iran understands that ISIS and the presence of ISIS and the activities of ISIS, Iran understands that it could really benefit Iran. Iran is not interested in seeing this terrorist group eliminated from the Middle East, and certainly not from Europe or the West. Iran has two basic ambitions. It wants to be the dominant power in the Middle East, and Iran wants to undermine and destroy Israel, America, and the West. And the presence of the Islamic State is helping Iran accomplish those two ambitions. No doubt about it. Now, what does the Bible have to say about Iran and ISIS and these events in the Middle East? What does the Bible say that we need to be focusing on? Well, as our regular listeners know, when it comes to the Middle East, and when it comes in particular to Iran, we point people to a very dramatic and specific prophecy in Daniel 11. Daniel 11, and the prophecy is verses 40 through 42, and I'll just read verse 40. It says, And at the time of the end, so this is an end-time prophecy. At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. So there's two entities here, the king of the south and the king of the north. The king of the south pushes at the king of the north, and the king of the north is forced to come to and invade the region of the king of the south. Where is the region of the king of the south? Where is this invasion taking place? Is it in South America? Is it in Asia? Is it in North America? Is it in Africa? How do we know that it's the Middle East? Well, the Bible says, verse 43 and 44, talk about how the king of the north comes in and Egypt doesn't escape, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians don't escape. So just reading this prophecy, we know that the king of the south, this entity of the king of the south, must exist in the Middle East. The Bible tells us that very clearly. So who is the king of the south exactly? Well, we have an entire booklet on this subject proving who the king of the south is, revealing who the king of the south is comprehensively. You can request that booklet at thetrumpet.com. The title of the booklet is The King of the South. But here's what Mr. Flurry writes on page 41 of The King of the South. Iran will undoubtedly lead the King of the South. This power will be comprised of the radical Islamic movement. Iran is working fiercely to lead this radically militant religion. The King of the South is radical Islam led by Iran. On page 42 of this booklet, Mr. Flurry says, the King of the South is undoubtedly the Iran-led radical Muslims. They are strong and are pushing others around in the Middle East. Does that sound like the Islamic State? This prophesied King of the South is comprised of radical Islam with Iran as its leader, Iran as its king. Prophetically, Iran and ISIS are part of the King of the South. They're both part of the same group. That's the truth. And for anyone willing and prepared to do the research and to look at the connections between Iran and ISIS, they'll see that reality. But the prevailing narrative today in the mainstream media and in the intelligence agencies in the West and the capitals of the West, the prevailing narrative is that ISIS is the enemy of Iran, that they hate each other, and that Iran is on our side. Iran has no interest in ISIS's existence, and if we work with them and if we're nice enough to them, they're going to help us purge the Middle East of ISIS. That's not true. ISIS is the child of Iran. Without Iran's assistance, ISIS would not exist. And as I said, you can, if you're prepared to research this, you can trace the roots of ISIS all the way back to Iran. The same with Hezbollah, the same with Hamas, the same with, well, I can't remember all the names of these terrorist groups in the Middle East, but in nearly every instance, they can all be traced back to Iran and the Islamic Revolution of 1979. It's remarkable. And it's absolutely consistent with Bible prophecy. Iran is the lead, or it's the king of this group, the King of the South. Iran is the king of radical Islam. And don't get drawn into this argument that, well, ISIS and so many of these other groups, they belong to Sunni Islam. Therefore, their beliefs don't align with Iran. And I think Hezbollah is Shia Islam. Therefore, these two never get along. They're mortal enemies. They've been fighting each other for centuries. Don't buy that narrative. It's just not true. Iran and ISIS, prophetically, are part of this radical Islamic King of the South that is pushing at Europe. And again, verse 40 there says that the King of the South pushes at the King of the North. Iran is pushing at the King of the North, even through the activities of ISIS. You know, Iran is not telling ISIS to do it necessarily, but Iran's helped bring ISIS into existence. So these terrorist attacks that we see in Europe, they are part of the push from the King of the South. They're part of the push. And as Mr. Gerald Flurry talks about all the time in The Trumpet and on the website and in the Key of David, Europe is going to respond. Okay, well, I've used up so much time covering this subject that I don't have time to get into something a little bit more positive. That is just recognizing the fact that England's Queen turns 90 tomorrow. So I think I'll leave that. Richard Palmer takes the lectern tomorrow. Maybe he'll want to get into that. But what we will do, I will leave you with the Crown Imperial. This is the orchestral march composed by Sir William Walton. He was an English composer. But this is the march that is performed at the coronation of English kings and queens. It was first performed at the coronation of King George VI in 1937. And the Crown Imperial was performed again in 1953 when Queen Elizabeth II, who turns 90 tomorrow, congratulations, Your Majesty, was crowned. So thanks for having me, and enjoy Crown Imperial.